Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today we have Anthony Morley on. Back again, we're going to talk a little bit about Liberty Latin America. Welcome onto the show, Anthony.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, right on. So, now you are a shareholder in LILAC.
Yep, we have about a 7% position in Liberty Global or Liberty Latin America.
Yeah, and there have been a few updates since we've last spoken about it. I mean, they did the hard spin, so it's not a tracking stock anymore. But why don't you talk? Why don't you talk to us a little bit about the company?
Yeah, we'll do. Briefly. Last time we kind of went over it real briefly, and I wanted to go a little bit more in depth on it. So yeah, like you said, originally this was part of Liberty Global, which was more of a European focus.
And it was tracking the Latin American assets of Liberty Global originally.
Correct, which were only about 10% of Liberty Global. So they did a tracking stock, and then after a few years, they did a hard spin. So now it's its own company.
And what do you think the reason for that was to not have it be a tracking stock anymore?
I believe it's because they bought CNW Cable and Wireless, and it was a larger company. And they must have believed that there weren't any more tax benefits for keeping them together. And I do think that some shareholders wanted to either own Latin American assets or wanted to own the European assets. So I think they just wanted it to be separate. What do you think? You have any opinion?
Not really.
Okay.
I just assumed it was probably that there weren't any more tax benefits and they thought it would be more efficiently run with a different management team.
Yeah,
I mean, that was just my very, very on the surface opinion on it. It doesn't really matter what my opinion was anyway, because they did it.
So yeah, you know, some of these are viewed as traditional cable companies, but I really view them mostly as a broadband internet company. The majority of the profits of the business come from offering internet service to their customers, and you know, traditionally some of these. Some of the countries where they operate in made a lot of money or made a decent amount of money offering, you know, the video product, the bundled video. But that's kind of changed. That is a much lower margin business. And if people kind of want to learn more about that, I'd suggest reading Cable One's investor presentations to kind of provides a pretty good explanation of the math behind it.
And that's been across the board in the industry, not just in Latin America.
Correct. Yeah. It's been all over the world.
Because Charter Communications talks about this too.
Yes, absolutely. But I think Cable One's probably the only one that really lays out their math for showing what their video margin is versus what their internet margin is. And you know, really, to provide the internet, it's a very low operating expense cost, and then it becomes a high margin. You know, because that's a high margin product. And I also think that there's pretty significant untapped pricing power delivering internet.
What makes you say that?
Because for a new competitor to come in, you have to spend massive amounts of capital expenditures, and you have to get a lot of customers. You probably have to get 25 to 30% of the customers for the homes that you pass, that you lay down your fiber in. And if you don't, similar to Google Fiber, which experienced this, you're just not going to make money. Obviously raising prices makes those economics better for a new incumbent or a new competitor. But I think over time they'll be able to raise prices with no problem.
Interesting. So now how are you looking at LILAC from a valuation standpoint?
Yeah, so LILAC, they're going to make about $1.4 billion in EBITDA this year. And most of these broadband or cable companies trade on enterprise value to EBITDA ratios. So they are selling for about 7x enterprise value to EBITDA.
And the reason I think we should also make it clear, the reason that ratio is specifically important in this industry is a lot of these companies take on a lot of debt.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Correct. And they take on the debt, and then they have large interest expenses.
Correct. Right.
Which oftentimes make it look like they don't make money. But part of it's because they're aggressively investing to lay new fiber and get new customers too. So the maintenance CapEx is significantly less than what they're spending in capital expenditures each year.
Right.
And so also telecom companies are trading at all-time lows. I just saw a report a few months ago that they're trading about 30 or 40% less than historically the multiples they've traded at.
People will say, you know, the counter argument to that is people are going to say, well, there's all this cord cutting going on and everything's, you know, moving away from that industry. And, you know,
interesting, you know, cord cutting's become a thing, but all that you're doing is you're getting rid of your video product, but you're not actually cutting the cord because the internet still comes into your home and you're using that.
Well, there's also concerns with 5G.
Yep, so there are concerns with 5G.
I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I'm pretending like I'm neutral and giving the other.
the only large company that really has a lot of faith in 5G becoming game-changing, basically instead of you using, you know, Liberty Latin America or using Charter to provide your internet, you'd use AT&T or Verizon. Well, Verizon said that, yeah, we can deliver fixed wireless internet to your house through the airwaves.
Okay, what the fuck's the deal with Verizon? Because if you look at, they've been putting out these press releases around 5G to the point it's almost weird. Have you noticed this stuff?
Like, absolutely.
And you either think that maybe they're scared, or they're trying to overcompensate for something, or there's something going on with them.
This is probably more for Charter, but this is the same Verizon that made an offer, I believe, in the $400 range for Charter a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. And Charter said denied, rejected. We're not going to take that.
Correct. And so AT&T has come out and said, yeah, we can deliver wireless internet to your home, but there's not a business case for it. And basically, the capital expenditures would be much too significant for the returns that they get. So I don't see AT&T and Verizon getting into the home internet business because it's going to cost a lot to build all the small cells near everyone's home to deliver that internet. So the fiber is still much cheaper, and it's already there, and it will deliver a faster, more reliable product.
Yeah, you know, another time we should probably do an episode on GCI Liberty, and we can probably discuss this in more detail.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I kind of think of all these broadband internet companies in that vein. This connection to your home is extremely important, and I think they'll have pricing power on it. And so what makes Liberty Latin America interesting is the penetration rates. In some of their countries, like in Panama, the penetration rate is only 46%. In Chile, it's 66%. And Jamaica, it's 45% for their population. Well, in the U.S. and in Puerto Rico, those penetration rates are 83%. So, sure, these are lower-income countries, but over time, as they hopefully do better, and, you know, the internet delivers some of the best bang for your buck. Like, you get... You can function in life a lot easier by having the internet in your house. So I think those penetration rates will significantly increase, and Liberty Latin America will be a big beneficiary of that. And a lot of the fiber to those homes is already laid. The penetration rate so Liberty Latin America has about 30% of their customers, of the passings that they have. So if their fiber goes by 100 homes, only 30 of them are customers right now. So there's a lot of potential customers there that they can sign up without much or any additional capital expenditures.
Now tell us about their consolidation strategy. I mean, isn't their plan to start buying up other companies in the region?
Yep. So they recently announced a deal to buy a company in Costa Rica.
How am I doing, by the way? I'm pretending I don't know any of this stuff.
Pretty good.
Okay, thanks. Okay, good. Yeah, so I heard about this. Tell us some more.
Yeah, so they recently bought a company in Costa Rica. I would expect that they are looking at pretty much every other Latin American internet asset. part of the reason they're looking for it is they own a very good subsea fiber network that goes to the Caribbean. And you obviously have to pay fees to use that network. So any country that's connected to that network, you know, they'd have some cost savings by buying an asset and then, say, one of the islands that subsea cable connected to.
Right. There is a, I don't remember their name. There's a company that's trying to act as a competitor to them. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was on their website, like, a few weeks ago. Now this is killing me that I don't remember their name.
I mean, there's multiple competitors in, you know, in pretty much all their markets.
Hold on. Give me a second. I want to look something up really quick. I'll edit this part out, too.
Yep.
Yeah, someone posted... Oh, here it is. DeepBlueCable.com.
Oh, I did see that. Yep. Yeah, I don't quite know how to think about it. But yeah, they might be building that.
Like a lot.
What's that?
Like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it says even on their website, they go, as a developing region with 10-year growth predicted to reach a minimum of 50 times existing capacity, the Caribbean urgently requires more reliable and lower latency connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, and there are more network, there are more cables than just the one that they have, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't quite know how to think about it, but, you know, it's certainly a competitor.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could always end up being good for both of them, too.
True. Yeah.
So. And you don't know how good of capital allocators these guys are either.
That's also a good point.
Because they just talk about significant growth. So who the fuck knows if they end up taking on a shit ton of debt and overpaying for companies.
Yep.
You know, so they and of course they'll make out anyway because they can probably raise a lot of capital and the management team will make a lot of money regardless. So
it could
be one of those things like a private equity play or something that contact us.
Yep.
Yeah. Who knows? Well, okay. Anyway, let's go back to
what we're talking about. I'll kind of wrap this up with what I think will happen.
Okay. Yeah, so Anthony, tell us a little bit about what you see in the future, kind of what you think or hope may happen with this industry and this company.
Yeah, so Liberty Latin America has about $1.4 billion in EBITDA, like I said. I think that'll continue to grow high single digits for a long time because you're going to get higher penetration rates in many of the countries that they operate in. And if they do, and if you just think of, you know, a modest multiple for what that'll be in, you know, say 5-10 years, I think this company will be worth significantly more. And the stock actually recently traded down to about $17 or $18, and the CEO bought $2 million more, and the CFO bought $400,000. So that's nice to see that they're buying the stock as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it'll be interesting to see if this... This growth strategy and buying other, you know, smaller companies in the region, if that works out, there's no way you could justify the price today.
Yeah, but I don't think so either. And one thing I didn't mention, Puerto Rico basically got totally devastated last year. Now it's one of their bigger countries.
Hold on. It did.
It did get devastated. I mean, the loss of life was horrible and sad. Yeah. But it was an extreme stress test of the business.
And they got hit twice.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, with Maria and Irma. And so in September of last year, when the hurricane hit, the internet was totally shut down in the country because there was no power. And a bunch of the broadband lines and nodes were damaged. And so now just fast forward 1 year later, and 93% of the customers are back online. The company only had one quarter of negative EBITDA. And the damages, I believe, were around $100 million in Puerto Rico. But most of the damages, about $75 million, were covered in an insurance policy that they had. And so I'm not sure you can put a business through a bigger stress test than that, where you know, all kinds of the equipment or the plant gets destroyed.
Yeah, it was interesting. I remember when the stock had hammered after all that, and then they announced that, you know, like, they didn't go bankrupt. I mean, I still remember, I think it was like $2 a share of their business, right? If that was worth nothing, you only have to mark the intrinsic value of like $2 a share, right? And then the stock price went down a lot more than that. So here you had a situation which literally is a worst case scenario. I mean, literally it's the business is gone temporarily and they're fine. And to me, that gave me more confidence in their business. And I thought that, you know, the stock price actually should have gone up after we found out that they were fine, but it's done the opposite. It's kind of interesting, right?
It's pretty much the same price it was about a year ago or lower, if anything.
Which also speaks to, I just want to say this too, you know, people I'm sure ask you, do you ever get this question from people who are like a little skeptical about value investing? They go, well, you know, if this works so well, why doesn't everyone do it? You know, if you know, there must be something you're missing in the information that you're not seeing. But you ever get some like something like that where people question it a little bit?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right. Definitely. So here's a perfect example where you have a worst case scenario for Puerto Rico, and they're fine. The company is literally fucking fine, and so that's not information that I've had to predict. We've seen it in action. We've seen what's happened. Yet because the region hasn't fully come back, because the growth fully hasn't happened yet. And there potentially could be another hurricane this year. People are so short-term minded in their thinking that you don't see tremendous demand on the stock, even when we know all this information already.
Yeah, we know what the past is. We know the financial numbers are going to look better. And yeah, you know, obviously their EBITDA for Puerto Rico was affected this year because they're still getting everyone back online. So it's going to be $1.4 billion this year. You know, you're going to get another $50 million or so of EBITDA from what you didn't get.
Right, and you also have to assume that you're not going to get two hurricanes that are that destructive to the region every single year either.
And no, it's going to be extremely rare when that happens. So in the Caribbean, you're going to get hurricanes, but we've already stress tested it, so we kind of know what the effect of that's going to be.
And the insurance is already taking that into account as well.
Correct. And that's something I didn't know. You know, that's not in the 10-K saying the insurance is going to cover or what the insurance will cover.
Right, which is also why that initial stock pot, you know, when that stock tanked from like 26 or something down to like 22 or whatever it was, you know, one of the thoughts was, oh, wow, maybe they're not insured, right?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I definitely had that fear.
And then, of course, it's, well, maybe there's other regions that they operate in which are also not insured, and now they're totally liable, and this business is a total sham, right? And who the fuck knows? You didn't think that would probably be the case, the fact that this is a John Malone company, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, it's one detail that could have been missed, and I know I've never shopped around for insurance for my internet business.
You haven't, huh? Business. No way. me neither, by the way. Just a coincidence. See, we have more in common than we realized.
Absolutely. But yeah, I guess we'll kind of wrap up.
Yeah.
I do think this is probably going to grow a high single digits EBITDA in the future because you're going to get more people using the internet in their countries. They also did announce a buyback program and bought back a little bit of stock. Once there really isn't much, if anything, there's negative free cash flow right now. Once you get some free cash flow, they said they'll buy back more stock. So this will be a levered equity approach, just like Malone's other companies. And if you get above average growth rates in EBITDA and buying back stock, you're probably going to end up with a pretty good result many years in the future.
Yeah, and I also wonder, we may have talked about this last time we talked about Lilac, but the, you know, Latin America is significantly more, you know, less consolidated than the United States. It's significantly more fragmented. That's the word I was looking for. And if you look at what John Malone did, you know, in the 70s, where the United States was significantly more fragmented with cable companies and you know, cable, telecom, all that. This could be part of the, you know, John Malone playbook of sort of replicating the model he was doing decades ago, but now doing in Latin America, where there's more room for consolidation.
Yeah, I'd say they're certainly running the same playbook. These countries, for the ones that they're in right now, besides Chile, are relatively small.
Yeah.
But it's run the same playbook there.
Well, I remember in have you read the book Outsiders?
Yes.
So John Malone is mentioned in one of those chapters, and I remember when I started reading about Liberty Lilac, and I go, oh, you know, this kind of reminds me of a similar playbook to what I was reading about in Outsiders.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't remember that part, but I'm sure I had the same thought.
Yeah, yeah. Well, very interesting. We should come back to this maybe in about a year, because I think things – we will have stuff to talk about in a year regarding the company.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would not be surprised if they do another acquisition or they increase the buyback program or something.
I was going to say or buy back more stock. But I would bet on both. If I had to bet here, I'm going to publicly say on record my prediction is within a year they're going to have bought back more stock and then will have found – at least one other company to buy. They said they have a pretty extensive pipeline of stuff they're looking at.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. So, all right, well, I guess I'll be back on in September of next year.
All right, sounds good.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Eric. No worries, man. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.